Sheffield Live, made in Sheffield, made by you.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Dawn? You know what? I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3 here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
Hello, I'm Harry Wilburn. I present Steel & Wire every Wednesday, 10 a.m. Americana, bluegrass, American roots, and more. Lots more. Lots of guests, lots of local music and musicians. That's Steel & Wire, Wednesday, 10 a.m.
You're listening to fabulous Harry Wilburn on Steel & Wire.
Before. It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best of new indie, electro, EDM and punk and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7 p.m. here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
N-E-X-T.
Good morning, welcome to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire, or sheffieldlive.org. You can listen online there. You can also download the podcast later and listen at your leisure. This show is all about science in all its different forms, and we play some rather cool music as well. You've got Julian Paul here live in the studio as usual.
Yes.
On this rather warm Saturday, the 27th of June. That's if you're listening on Catch Up in particular. Of course, it's the England's match tonight, the final of their group, this round anyway. It's all been interesting stuff, hasn't it? Cooling down after today as well, but we'll speak about that a bit later on. Later in this hour, we'll be talking to RPG. We've also got a guest speaker for this week, and indeed every fourth Saturday of the month, it's Chris Dale. He'll be talking about the decline of the Mumbai Dabbawalas. If you want to know what that's all about, you're going to have to listen. All good stuff. All being well, next week, and indeed every first Saturday of the month, our guest speaker is Phil Muffet from the Mexman Swinton Astronomical Society. On that note, he sent me a message, because also he's a member of Manvers Waterfront Boat Club. That's www.mwbc.org.uk, and he said that the temperature of Manvers Lake this morning is a new record since they started measuring the temperature. I think it was Phil's idea. It's hit 25.2 degrees Celsius this morning and rising, and it has been a rather hot weekend. So on that note, of course, the hot weather's been all over the news. But indeed, last month, the Climate Change Committee, or CCC, was already warning that Britain needed to change the way it has been adapting to the heat, with recent extreme weather events likely to become more common. By 2050, the Climate Change Committee report that 92% of homes in the UK are likely to overheat. And there's been a big issue in all over the country. I mean, in Sheffield last night, the tram stopped running because it was too hot. You got rail disrupted. Taxi drivers apparently were few and far between as well. So there you go.
And this morning, as we came past the bingo place on
Flat, it was shut.
On Bond Street, it was
we
shut.
I think maybe they've got no air conditioning, but yeah, it's interesting.
There's always
stuff.
A queue outside at 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
Nothing to be seen. So, and on that note, solar panels costing only hundreds of pounds are set to go on sale within months after review found they were safe to use in the UK. Unlike typical rooftop solar panels, which require professional installation, they can be plugged directly into a socket and can supply up to 25% of a home's electrical needs. We were up in Scotland the other day, around Edinburgh, and all the new build estates all had solar panels on the roofs, didn't they, Julie?
They did indeed.
And they were big estates as well. But they are already popular in Germany and are considered an affordable way for householders to shield themselves from the impact of the rising energy prices.
Indeed. Meanwhile, the world's biggest batteries are coming to the UK as part of an effort to keep the lights on when the wind doesn't blow. So that's sustainable energy, of course. Form Energy, the company which builds batteries large enough to power a city the size of Leicester for more than 4 days straight, announced its intention to bring its technology to Britain during an event at London Climate Action Week.
Well, it must be massive, that. Elsewhere in the news, astronomers have discovered two giant superpuff planets in orbit around a distant star, finding that they are at least as big as Jupiter, but lighter than candy floss. They are the largest such worlds yet detected, prompting scientists to question how planets can form with such low densities and whether they are likely to evolve into something more solid as they mature. Beyond the eight planets in our solar system, more than 6,000 exoplanets have so far been detected across the Milky Way, including a wide array of weird and wonderful worlds.
And if you're tuning regularly to this show, Phil Muffett from Mexican Swinton Astronomical Society did a session about the Milky Way as well. Fascinating stuff. But that's an interesting one, these superpuff planets. Big as Jupiter, but lighter than candy floss. Get your head round that one,
yes.
Then. Before we chat to RPG, final story. I saw this in the press. It was probably a couple of weeks ago now. Blood test to revolutionise prenatal genetic testing. Prenatal testing in pregnant women could be changed forever by a technique using only a blood sample from the mother, scientists have said. The method called non-invasive fetal sequencing was presented at the Conference of the European Society of Human Genetics on the 13th of June 2026. Research was carried out on 565 pregnancies with an average gestation of 17 weeks. The technique identified 97.2% of the genetic variants linked to conditions that are currently detected through invasive testing. The test can also screen up to 23,000 genes on top of those detected through existing non-invasive prenatal testing. On the NHS, pregnant women are given a blood test to assess the possibility of their baby having Down's syndrome, Edwards or Patau syndrome. Existing non-invasive methods often offer low resolution results and can only deduce a small number of genetic abnormalities. If these results show a higher risk, pregnant women will then be recommended invasive procedures that insert a needle into the womb to collect a sample of tissue from the placenta or amniotic fluid. Both carry a 1 in 200% of miscarriage. 1 in 200 chance of miscarriage. Due to these risks and difficulties relating to cost and access in some countries, many women refuse the invasive sequencing methods. Dr. Christopher Whelan of the Board Institute of the Massachusetts Institute of Technology in Harvard said that that's why women avoid that invasive testing, the risk of miscarriage. And he said, we were trying to develop a test with similar diagnostic value but without the risks and other downside. Alexandre Raymond, chair of the conference, who was not involved in the study, said it means reproductive medicine will be changed forever.
We will slow your life, slow, slow.
Great track, that. Love Like Blood from Killing Joke, of course, back in 1985, my word. We played that because we're talking about a blood test to revolutionise prenatal genetic testing. If you've just tuned in, of course, you listen to Live Sounds Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital, if you're in South Yorkshire, or sheffieldlive.org. Talking about science in all its different forms every Saturday morning, 11 until 12. We should have our PG on the line. Good morning, PG.
Good morning.
So, how have you been faring with this hot weather then?
Pretty good. I've been melting slowly, but not having a meltdown.
Haven't we all? Other things have been melting as well, haven't they? Like roads and things.
Yeah, tram tracks and, lots of things. It's Sheffield all over, isn't it?
Well, it's not just Sheffield, is it? I think we really were a bit cooler than southern parts.
Yeah, well, we've got a bit of a microclimate, I think. We've been nestled in the hills, but I think the sort of thing that I was looking at today is the weather predictions, and they're saying, are we in for a summer of serial heat waves? So I think yesterday in Western Park we broke a record that stood since about 1911.
Ooh.
For the heat. So it's one of those things where there's a lot of comparisons running back to the heat wave of 1976. I'm wondering if we've sort of beaten the records. But it says over the last 2 months in the UK, we've experienced two heat waves, which have both shattered significant long-standing records. And although we're still relatively earlier in the summer, our hottest weather's normally coming in July and August. So while this heat wave, this sort of meteorologists predict, is coming to an end over the weekend, so we should see a cool day tomorrow, they're saying that since May, there's been a large area of high pressure, which is called a heat dome, sat across the UK, bringing dry, sunny and very warm weather. A new May record temperature of 35.1 centigrade was set in Kew Gardens in London. In June, it was the start of meteorological summer, and it was a wetter and much cooler note, and the temperatures actually dropped below average. But then low pressure from the Atlantic brought a series of weather fronts, with the whole of June's rainfall in just the first half of the month, which is a real sort of juxtaposition, I think. You sort of sat listening to driving rain, and the next thing we got baking heat.
So, well, the thunderstorms Friday morning were phenomenal. I mean, that was a lot of rain, and thank goodness we got the rain, Paul.
Yes, yeah. Well, I think that was one of the things that they said that stopped the super tram running, was the loudest thunderstorm.
Yeah.
It depends where you are, though, I say, because the layout in Sheffield, some places will trap the sound and other places will get away with it. So that's really, I mean, sort of general guidance for the kind of weather we've been having is to drink water, eat foods with high water content, wear loose-fitting clothes with breathable fabrics and a hat, stay in the shade and limit travel and exercise, and use fans, ice and cool showers to reduce your body temperature. But they say that significant bursts of heat are likely. That's from the three-month summer outlook forecast, which came out on the 1st of June. And he's saying that there are higher than normal chances of hotter weather during June. Well, we're nearly out of June, but we got July and August to come.
Well, yeah.
It's quite a thing. And I think that a lot of the problems that people sort of see now are how to cope with it. And I think that if you think about people in the sort of hot weather, it can affect everyone. But people run a greater risk of serious harm due to the temperature. And experts recommend that those who may be more vulnerable, such as older people, babies and young children, should take extra precautions. So I guess I get in on the first bit of that. But sort of advice says, what does the heat, extreme heat, do to our bodies? So it says as your body gets hotter, your blood vessels open up. That lowers your blood pressure and makes your heart work harder to push blood around your body. And the process can cause mild symptoms like itchy heat rash or swollen feet. And at the same time, sweating leads to a loss of fluids and salt. And crucially, the balance between them in the body changes. And this combined with the lowered blood pressure can lead to heat exhaustion. And the symptoms of that are dizziness, nausea, fainting, confusion, muscle cramps, headaches, heavy sweating and tiredness. And if your blood pressure drops too far, then the risk of heart attacks arises. So I think there's been news of somebody in the heat wave already dying of a heart attack. So it is a real sort of danger to beware of. So I think we're kind of generally moving away now from the old idea that the sun comes out and you go take off your top, lay out in the park or whatever it is, or walk around and soak up as much sun as you can. And I think we're now being a bit more respectful of the heat. So it's the development of the heat is making our bodies work harder. And the kind of effects that you might feel are dizziness, feeling faint from not drinking enough water, your heart rate increases as your body works harder. You can get the heat rashes, as I said, and your body loses heat from the skin. So skin produces sweat. Sweating cools the skin by losing heat through evaporation. And I say one of the things that can show that you're in trouble is your ankles become swollen from the increased blood flow. So the UK Health Security Agency recommends looking out for those who may struggle to keep cool, such as older people and those with underlying conditions and those who live alone. I guess also there's a rider from people at RSPCA to be wary of your pets. The real dangers if you take your dog out in a car and then leave your dog in the car while you just nip into a shop, it can quite quickly turn into something a lot worse for your animals. So keep an eye on your pets, make sure they've got water available, and try and keep them out of the baking direct sun, and hopefully they're going to have some common sense, but you keep an eye on them as well.
Well, most of them have got a lot of fur, Paul. Doesn't help, does it?
Well, I think that's it. I mean, say you're relying on them having some common sense to keep an eye on them. And also, people who are at risk. So you can stay cool indoors by closing your curtains on the rooms that face the sun. And if you like my house, in the morning I get the sun on one side of the house. It tracks down the side through the day and fixes on the back of the house later on in the day. So in the morning, I keep the front curtains closed and the back curtains open and the windows open. And as the day changes, I switch ends and close the curtains at the back and open the windows at the front just to try and keep a flow of air through the house. Drink plenty of fluids, but there's a rider saying avoid too much alcohol.
Yeah, my uncle was saying France was banning alcohol because of the heat wave.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm. I think it's a common sense thing. And what it's saying is you can put yourself under an increasingly high amount of pressure if you have more than a few beers. So some people would take a cold beer as their favourite way of chilling down, but it can come with risks. So water's the guidance on the best thing you can be doing. It says stay in the shade, but also start looking for that high SPF and UVA rated sunscreen, especially for youngsters. Wear a wide brimmed hat, so try and shield yourself that way. Avoid doing physical exercise in the hottest part of the day, and carrying water with you if you're travelling is a great thing to do. But anyone tempted to cool off in rivers and open water, as we've seen in recent news, they're very dangerous, and you might not consider any hidden dangers that are there just by being overcome by the temptation of a cool dip.
Yeah, but it's a transition from being overheated to that cold water shock, isn't it?
It's both that, and also, as they say, you know, a lot of the waterways don't tell you if there's a danger of hidden weed just below the surface. So you jump in thinking that you're going to swim around, and you suddenly find yourself tangled in something that there's no notice about. So
Manvers Waterfront Boat Club, as Phil Muffett's a member of, they've been putting some fantastic stuff up on social media, on Facebook and stuff, just warning about the dangers of how tempting it is, particularly in this weather. And maybe you've had a few beers as well.
Yeah.
And you're egging your mates on and jumping this river. And loads of people have got into trouble, haven't they?
Yeah, well, absolutely. There have been deaths. So, I mean, it's not just a scare.
No.
It can be fatal. So, realistically, you've got to be aware of the danger. I think a lot of places you can sit and dabble your feet in the water, which will help you cool down. But you've got to be wary that on riverbanks and the side of some things, it can be quite steep. So when you think you're going to sit there and have a cool paddle, you suddenly find yourself up to your neck in water.
Yeah,
The shock can be a bad thing for you. So what could you do if you think someone's got heat exhaustion or a heat stroke? So the NHS says you should move them to a cool place, get them to lie down and raise their feet slightly, because as we said, your body's struggling to pump the blood around. So get them to drink plenty of water. Sports or rehydration drinks are also okay. Cool the skin. Spray or sponge them with cool water and fan them. Cold packs around the armpits or the neck are also good. So if you can find an ice pack,
or a bag of peas wrapped in a tea towel, frozen peas or something.
Yeah, or a cold bottle of water out of the fridge is another cool thing. So if you can cool them down within half an hour, then heat exhaustion's not normally serious. So you do that when you've got the first signs, rather than letting it go to a point where, even with all the effort, you're going to leave them at risk of a heat stroke. If it's a medical emergency, you should call 999 immediately. So you're not asking for advice, you're asking for emergency support. And it says people with heat stroke may stop sweating even though they're too hot, because their temperature could go over 40 degrees centigrade and they might have seizures or lose consciousness. So heat exhaustion says you run the risk of feeling faint or dizzy, excessive sweating, clammy skin, nausea, vomiting and muscle cramps. But heat stroke says you could be left feeling confused without sweating. Temperatures over 40 degrees centigrade and you've got hot, dry skin, nausea or vomiting, and you may lose consciousness or experience convulsions or seizures. So it's time to take precautions, hopefully for another day or so, and then the weather will abate. But we could be in for another couple of months of variable but high temperatures. And it's not just us.
No.
Moorlands are on fire again in Derbyshire. I think 200 hectares, I think I was hearing, is burning through woodland and open land ground. The warning for that is if you want to go out to get some country air, try and improve your lot, then don't take naked flames out when you're camping out or picnicking out. Don't take cooking appliances. Anything that generates a naked flame is a danger because the ground is so dry, the vegetation is very dry, and it doesn't take an awful lot to start off a significant fire. And then you might not be worried about heat stroke other than being trapped in an inferno. So do consider when you go for a quick picnic. One of the things that I think all the fire brigades came out against was the portable barbecue.
Yes, a lot of places ban them, don't they?
Absolutely. It's a foil tray with some combustible material and a little bit of a grid to take out and barbecue. But quite often when they've been used, people don't know what to do with them.
And they're hot, aren't they? So you can't touch them. But we was just saying, why when it's absolutely boiling hot, would you want to have a barbecue? But the smell of fuel and smoke.
They do them on
boiling.
Beaches, don't they, as well?
Yeah,
yeah, well, beaches, again, not... Well, you can put the sand onto the, guess, but...
I think, again, that's one of the things that they said. A lot of people have been injured by people burying those
The sand keeps it hot, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
And if you do it in peat areas, then it can still be generating heat underground and actually generating even more heat to trigger off a fire. So it's be sensible. And as you say, I think it's a bit of an odd choice, isn't it, having a red-hot barbecue running when you're trying to keep cool.
Yeah, well, my uncle said yesterday he used to work in steelworks. So it was just like, a heat wave, beyond a heat wave, every single day working near a furnace. But he said what they were told to do is if they really, really overheated, was to go and run cold water over their wrists because it's where the arteries are. And if you can cool the blood there, it does seem to work. Either that or maybe go to the pub.
Well, again, it was, I used to work in a brewery where I got a beer allowance. Quite a lot of the steel works, they could get a beer allowance. But also... what we tend to lose when we're sweating a lot is salt.
Yes, so salt tablets.
A lot of them were issued with salt tablets or they got the salt tablets themselves. And my dear old dad was stationed in Egypt for a long time. And again, that was one of the things that the army at the time carried around was salt tablets to compensate for that kind of loss in continual high heat.
But I think you do get acclimatised as well after a while, don't you? Body sort of adapts to it.
Well, it can do to a certain extent, but once your body heat actually exceeds its limit, then it can be quite catastrophic. The thing is, I think probably we get more respectful of the guidance that we're told to keep out of the direct sun. Think about what's happening when you're being moving around. So if you're travelling, be prepared. And, it sounds a bit dated these days, but they talk about having a parasol, an umbrella. That's
Chinese do that.
Yeah, shade yourself from the sun. And if you look at a lot of foreign countries, a great idea is one of those wonderful big folding fans. So you can help to reduce your temperature a little bit with that. And increasingly these days, it's portable devices like fans that run on batteries. You can get them built into hats, built into all sorts of things that you can carry around. I think when you get more respectful of it, because the danger is you see a sunny day and you think, oh, it's great. and you can be in trouble before you start to realise maybe it's not quite so great.
Yeah, but I think the world, you know, from growing up as a child, I don't remember it ever being like this in Britain. And, well, you know, the extreme heat is more like European heat. You know, if you went abroad to Spain because you couldn't guarantee any weather. But I think most people now, only the odd few you see walking around and they're absolutely burnt. Because suddenly, yeah. I mean, if you stay out in it too long, it is like third degree burns, isn't it?
Yeah. It's very, very difficult, I think, for people. I mean, what we're talking about is beating 100-year-old records for temperatures.
Yeah.
And I think the most recent one that chimes with people is 1976, which, for a lot of young people, is ancient history.
But a lot of people, it's been in the social media about that, comparing it, and somebody's done a comparison and said, this, what we're experiencing now is way, way beyond what we experienced in 76.
I think it is, but it was one of those long, hot summers. And I think that we've got so used to having a variable summer where it'll rain and then you'll have a burst of heat and then you'll be back to cooler temperatures, usually with more rain. So you sort of look, and you look at the old adages, April showers, they're cast a clout till May be out. There are lots of things that were guidance that have to be adapted. Mm-hmm. And as I say, I think just bearing in mind, be careful that you drink plenty of water. If you can eat foods, I mean, a favourite used to be watermelon. It's one of those things that you can eat as long as you get some
boring
kind of fluid to clean yourself out. They get really sticky and messy, don't they?
Yeah. It's not that. It's just that if you went to Turkey, dessert always used to be watermelon. It's like, that's not dessert.
Where's the sticky toffee pudding?
Absolutely.
But you know, on a serious note, we've been talking about this for a while now, Paul, about the UK government is under increasing pressure from people saying, you know, specialists and researchers and academics saying Britain is not gearing itself up for these future extreme heat episodes. And it's just not just the heat, it's the water, you know, heavy rain. It's like monsoon, isn't it? And the same, we're not geared up in as housing, in as hospitals, in as schools.
Care homes.
There's no air conditioning.
Well, I'll just give you the sort of bad background to it, and then you can let me disappear off to cool down. So, during 2022, which saw the highest recorded temperature in England at 40.3 centigrade, there were an estimated 2,985 so-called excess deaths as a result of the heat. Mm. There were an estimated 1,311 heat-associated deaths during the summer of 2024, and an estimated 1,504 during the summer of 2025. And most heat-related deaths were due to heart attacks and strokes caused by the strain of trying to keep your body temperature stable. So it's a real danger. It's great to enjoy it, but be careful and take a look at the rules. And if you want to pick up a bit more of that, there's a great set of articles under the BBC website that goes through a lot of that background and advice. So enjoy the sunshine, but don't kill yourself by it.
Exactly, good stuff. And you've chosen a great track, The Heat Is On by Glenn Frey.
Yeah, it's actually the best performing single by any member of the Eagles in terms of chart position and sales.
Get you. No. So we'll speak to you Monday, 1 to 3, Glory Days Rock Show. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Paul.
Cheers. Bye-bye. Bye.
On the street.
Heat Is On There by Glenn Frey, because our PG was talking about the impact of the heat wave and advice to stay cool. You're listening to the Life Science Radio Show, of course, here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM. We should have our Chris on the line. Good morning, Chris. Good morning.
Hi, everyone.
Good morning. Morning. We brought you in there with the Vagabonds, Pretty Boy. I know you couldn't hear it,
fantastic,
but I'm sure
you
know. It is a fantastic track from Hull, of course, Warren Records in Hull. But thanks for joining us, Chris, on this very sunny Saturday morning.
Yeah, I was listening to PG just now. Very wise words from a very wise man.
Oh, indeed, indeed. And we were just talking about, you actually have got air conditioning in your house, haven't you?
Yeah, when we bought an air source heat pump, so it heats up during the winter, and then during the summer we can use it as air conditioning. And last night we had the air conditioning on eco mode in the bedroom all night, and it cost 82p for the whole night.
Amazing. Well, you know, we've talked about this quite often on the Life Science Radio Show about, you know, when new houses are built, they're all going to be air source heat pumps and solar panels and stuff. So it's easy to do when you're building new, or you're doing a big renovation, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
It was one of the best investments that we made.
Yeah, I know. We'll come round to your house, Chris. next heat
you're
wave.
Welcome anytime.
Oh, brilliant.
Anytime.
Anyway, you've joined us today and you're going to be talking about the decline of the Mumbai Dabbawallahs.
Absolutely. Whoa. And this also relates very nicely to some of the discussions we've been having about healthy eating as well.
Of course, because that's what it's all related to, changing habits, isn't
related.
It
is, yeah. So every morning before Mumbai has woken up, men in white caps and shirts arrive at Mumbai's suburban railway stations on bicycles that are stacked with lunch boxes. They load these boxes onto trains, cross the city, and then they spread out on foot and bicycles to deliver hot, home-cooked meals to office workers. And then, after a short break, they do it all in reverse, collecting the empty boxes and returning them to the kitchens where they came from by mid-afternoon. And these men are called Dabbawallahs. And for more than a century, they have been keeping Mumbai fed through a delivery system so precise, it has become world famous. So the lunch boxes are called Dabbas, or in the UK, we refer to them as tiffin boxes.
Ah, yes.
And they usually carry rice, lentils, vegetable curries, rotis, and sometimes meat. And all of this is freshly cooked in homes across the city suburbs. For generations of office workers in Mumbai, home-cooked meals have remained deeply tied to family routine, culture, and dietary preferences, making the daily lunchbox an essential part of working life in the fast-paced city. I was just thinking, when we used to work as well, wouldn't it have been nice to have been given something like that?
Oh, indeed, indeed. When you said tiffin, yeah, but the key is, generally, it's vegetarian, but the real point is, it's all homemade, isn't it?
Bev's trolley.
All homemade, yeah. So how does it work? Well, each box is marked with an alphanumeric code that tells the Dabbawabba where it came from and where it is going and which floor of the building it belongs to, and then how to get it back. There's no apps, no GPS. It's just a system passed down through generations of workers who know Mumbai's trains and streets instinctively. The trade has brought Mumbai global attention, and Harvard Business School studied it as a masterclass in low-cost logistics. And incidentally, I had a look at that, and they actually said that in many cases, they couldn't find the logic of how it worked. So even Harvard Business School couldn't understand how it worked. In 2003, even the future King Charles spent some time with Dabbawabbas on a trip to Mumbai.
So this service has become synonymous with something that Mumbai prides itself on. And beneath the noise and rush, there are still some things that happen with unshakable precision. At the time, and this is also at a time when restaurants and canteens were limited, so bringing meals from home mattered deeply. The idea was sort of generally tracked back to a banker, and he hired a man to pick up his lunch from home early in the morning, deliver it to his office, and return the empty box later. It was a simple system that very soon caught on across the whole of Mumbai. Early Dabawabbers transported lunch boxes on bicycles and marked them with coloured threads so they could be sorted and returned accurately. And over time, these markings were replaced with a unique alphanumeric code system which deliverers came to rely on bicycles, motorbikes and the suburban train network. And as I said, looking at that study from Harvard University, there is a whole piece of it that some people, they even ran it through a computer model and they couldn't get it to work. So it's absolutely fascinating. At its peak, nearly 4,500 Dabawalas delivered around 50,000 lunchboxes across Mumbai every day, according to organizations that regulate and monitor the service. There's always something that monitors you, isn't there? No matter what you do in life. But the pandemic disrupted the system. As offices shut and people began to work from home, daily deliveries were no longer needed in the same way. And now the Dabawalas are struggling to survive. Mm. So Dabawalas, who once served 20 to 25 office workers a day, were suddenly left with only a handful of customers and some with none at all. And with little savings to rely on, many have had to leave the trade altogether. But offices have obviously since reopened, but remote and hybrid working models have sharply reduced the daily demand that once kept Mumbai's Dabawala network running at full scale. So after lockdown, work from home started, said Kieran Gavander, secretary of the Mumbai Tiffin Box Suppliers Association. Who would have ever thought that there was something like that? So some people now go into the office only 2 to 3 times a week, and this has had the big impact on the Dabawala. The number of registered Dabawalas has now fallen from 4,500 in 2018 to roughly 1,500 today. And at the same time, Mumbai's relationship with food has changed. And we talked about that, didn't we, about a year ago. Online food delivery apps like Swiggy and Zomato, never heard of those.
No.
Along with a growing number of outlets offering restaurant meals at low prices, have given people a new set of choices. And this includes Western chains like McDonald's, Burger King, and Pizza Hut.
Oh, this sounds so familiar. Doesn't it?
It does. It does. So where the Dabawala once had little competition, so they used to deliver a home-cooked meal for about £16 a month, they now have to compete with everything from biryani to burgers to fried chicken at the tap of a screen. So the Dabawala once earned around £160 a month delivering lunch boxes to sort of 15 to 20 customers a day, enough to support a family in one of India's most expensive cities. But by the end of 2022, after the pandemic, many only had one or two customers remaining. And for those Dabawalas who have tried to stay on, many have to do two jobs just to get by. So one Dabawala explained, before COVID, I used to deliver 25 Dabbers. Some of these people are now working from home. Some have lost their jobs and now only 15 customers remains. He said, so the income is very low and I have to do more than one job. We are continuing now, he said, but we cannot say what will happen in the future. But the impact of this is not just on the Dabawala. It started to impact on the health of the workforce in Mumbai. Home-cooked vegetable curries are being replaced with Western fast food as a lunchtime option. And when we spoke about a year ago, we talked about the shift in diet for middle to wealthy Mumbai yes. and Indians, that they're starting to go more towards that sort of fast food and eating a lot more meat and a lot more fried food rather than the healthy vegetable curries that they used to have. And before 1991, the percentage of those of obese people in India was less than 1%.
Wow.
And by 2000, it had increased to 6%. And last year, it was recorded at 18%. So that's an 18 times increase in obesity in 35 years.
Yeah.
And the biggest increase is amongst children of and adults of wealthier middle class families. And this is directly linked to the Western fast food and sugary drinks in particular. This year, in 2026, the majority of Indian deaths are now due to heart disease, and 60% of people with heart disease also have diabetes.
My word.
It's estimated by 2025, India will be a world leader with diabetes, with an estimated 130 million cases annually. In addition, given the expanding wealth and the significant change in diet, there is an expectation there will always also be a significant increase in obesity, hypertension, heart disease, strokes, and the number of cancers. And I'm just going to conclude by saying, let's hope the Dabbawalas make a comeback soon to encourage healthy home-cooked foods. But sadly, this seems unlikely.
Yeah, but look at that massive change in the health of the population over such a short window of time.
And one of the things that when I was doing the research for the program is that there's been a massive increase in sort of eating like Haagen-Dazs ice cream, sugary drinks, and whereas people used to just drink water to keep
yes.
cool. And because they've got more income, and apparently for some of the offices in Mumbai, they have an 11 o'clock break where people bring cold, sugary drinks and ice creams into the office to help the workers keep cool. And then they repeat it at 2:30. So they have their breakfast, they have sugary drinks, they have their lunch, then they have more sugary drinks and ice cream, and then they go home to eat. And that this is having a massive impact on the younger generation in Mumbai.
Yeah, well, it sounds very familiar to when, well, probably a year, maybe even longer, when you came on to talk about the diet of the indigenous, oh, I've got to get this right, it's the Haudenosaunee. You know what I mean?
Haudenosaunee.
That's the one. It's the same thing, isn't it? They'd had a specific diet, nothing to do with the modern fast food or anything. And then you introduce that and all of a sudden the health impacts are massive.
Yeah, well, it's called the thrifty gene. And sort of populations that used to eat very healthily, like the indigenous Red Indians used to, because they didn't eat a lot of meat. It was mainly vegetables. They had a thrifty gene that if they had a period of famine, that it slowly released the energy into the body. So, of course, suddenly you have a diet which is loaded with sugar, fat and salt. The body can't deal with it because the thrifty gene over thousands and thousands of generations
yeah.
has developed based upon a different diet. And actually in the reservations in North America, the indigenous Red Indians now are starting to eat what they used to eat, and they are now reducing their obesity and reducing their instances of cancer and diabetes.
Yeah, it's not good, is it?
I know, but the impact of the Western diet across India is it's a real health issue, isn't it?
It is, because India's a really got a big, really big population, hasn't it? For its size, I think.
I think it does. So that's why these figures are so massive.
Yeah, yeah. But I suppose young people in that sort of country, as you said, as they're becoming more wealthy and they're being exposed, I think the market opened up, didn't it? Oh, I don't know how many years ago. And then they're starting to be...
It was 1991.
Yeah.
They opened up the market.
Yeah, they're starting to be exposed to our Western culture. And of course, the young people are going to aspire to that, aren't they? They're going to see it on social media. They're going to want the posh ice cream and the fizzy drinks and the branded goods, and it's all marketing, isn't it? Particularly the younger generation.
Yeah, and I think the other thing as well is that the younger population are now doing much more desk-based jobs, sitting in front of computer-based jobs, rather than what they used to do traditionally, which was a lot more manual work. So yeah, on top of having a Western diet, which doesn't suit them, they are also doing less exercise, and that's contributing towards the obesity as well.
So it just sounds like the UK then, doesn't it? It's slightly lagging behind in the time frame. We're ahead of that curve, aren't we? We've got those similar issues because we've been exposed earlier.
Yeah, 100%. And in the UK, it's mainly people in the lower income brackets that are exposed to this. And in India, it's the middle to upper class people, the wealthier people. And so it's only going to be a matter of time before that starts to impact on the lower income people, which is very sad.
Yeah. I mean, you often say about the lemon drizzle cake in the UK in terms of that. Yeah. It's cheaper to buy a highly, heavily processed lemon drizzle cake that really has got nothing to do with lemon or much else in it, than make it yourself. And that's why people on low incomes buy that sort of thing. Brilliant stuff as always, Chris. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah.
We're going to play out with Alanis Morissette with a track called Thank You.
Mentions India as well.
It does indeed. Ooh. Fantastic. Stay cool, Chris, and enjoy the football later on. I'm sure you will.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you there by Alanis Morissette. Oh, that's a bit strange sound, isn't it? Now I've just changed my headphones. We played that for Chris, who was talking about the decline of the Mumbai. Dabba Wallah's interesting stuff. We're just going to play out now with a little bit of Pretty Boy from the Hull-based band, I think, The Vagabonds.